From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, providing twice-weekly service to Alaska's Emerald Isle.
The Alaska Board of Fish will consider a proposal to loosen restrictions on Cook Inlet set netters this March, 2 years ahead of its scheduled meetings on the fishery. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Several Kenai Peninsula set netters asked the board to fast-track their proposals to liberalize restrictions on the fishery. The goal was to address closures to the fishery next year, rather than in 2024, during the board's next scheduled meeting on Upper Cook Inlet. At a work session last week, the board said it would not fast-track those proposals, but it did fast-track one from board member Mackenzie Mitchell of Fairbanks. If passed, her proposal would allow fishing within 600 feet of the beach if the Lake Kenai King Run exceeds 13,500 fish.
While I understand not all set netters will have the ability to effectively fish at the 600-foot nets, it does give the department the tool to harvest the surplus sockeye that we've seen.
Eastside set netters had an abbreviated season this summer, since their restrictions are paired with those of the Kenai River King Salmon Sport Fishery. The Board of Fish introduced those restrictions in 2017 because it said set netters harvest more kings in their nets than the drift fleet. Set netters say they can fish for sockeye without taking kings and have been asking the Board of Fish to address those restrictions ahead of schedule, suggesting it open fishing to set netters with flagged nets, among other proposals. Mitchell said the agenda change requests submitted by set netters last week and the emergency petitions put forth this summer didn't meet the criteria to push them forward before 2024.
However, I do feel that this is an important issue, which I have stated on record previously. So I'm pursuing it through what I believe to be the appropriate regulatory process.
Her proposal would only close the fishery to set netters if the late run of king salmon in the Kenai River dips under 13,500 fish. That's the Department of Fish and Game's sustainable escapement goal for the run. Under the current plan, the fishery closes when there are fewer than 15,000 king salmon that pass through the sonar. Late run escapement hasn't passed 15,000 kings since 2018. The last three seasons, fewer than 12,000 kings passed through the sonar. Ken Coleman, a set netter and vice president of the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association, says he's somewhat optimistic about the new numbers.
I think that it's going to provide some opportunity for a reduced number of Eastside set netters.
He says not all set netters would benefit because the fishery would only open to nets within 600 feet of the beach. That excludes those who fish between 600 feet and a mile and a half offshore.
It's difficult to see a neighbor who's maybe 600 feet away from you at 700 feet from the beach not being able to fish, and you are.
Set netter Ted Crookston says it's important to specify that the goal is for a projected 13,500 fish if the proposal is to make any difference.
It is a foregone conclusion that the SEG goal of 13,500 fish for large kings will only be achieved at the very end, or certainly at very close to the end of the season. Therefore, to activate the 600-foot fishery at the very end of the season has no merit or value. The only way this proposal makes any sense or has any value is if we are using a 13,500 projected goal.
Overall, he says he's appreciative Mitchell put the agenda item forward. And he says she came to the Kenai Peninsula, as have other board members, to talk with set netters in person about their situation. Mitchell said there's urgency to finding a partial fix to the problem amid the over-escapement of Kenai River sockeye. Last year, the sockeye run was over-escaped by a million fish. Set netters said it was painful to watch salmon swim past their set net sites while they weren't allowed to fish. John Jensen of Petersburg was one of two no votes on sending the proposal forward. He said it's a go-around from the regular process.
For something this big, you think you're just cracking the door open a little bit here. You're just specifically alluding to one citation in the rule book, in the reg book. But once you get into that, you're going to have to start looking at what it does to other regulations. So you're going to start opening a whole Pandora's box, and you're going to get into way more than you ever thought you'd get into.
Board member Indy Walton of Soldotna said he supports the petition.
This is maybe some of the purposes of the board, not to make this a habit, but to be able to see a problem and be able to come together and potentially fix it.
The proposal is for the 2022 season only. The Board of Fish will consider Mitchell's proposal at its Anchorage meeting between March 11th and 16th, 2022. The deadline for comments is February 24th. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
KTOO's Rhonda McBride recently interviewed Joel Marcus, associate fisheries professor at the University of Alaska Southeast, about a hot topic in coastal Alaska, aquaculture and mariculture. The first thing she asked was something I've often wondered.
Can you give us a quick explanation of the difference between aquaculture and mariculture?
Yeah. And so aquaculture, I would say, is a more broad term. It is really rearing any type of aquatic organism. Mariculture is a little bit more specific, and that's the cultivation of marine organisms for food. And so we're specifically focused on marine organisms, and these are not fish, ultimately. And so mariculture in Alaska typically focuses on shellfish and kelp, but there are some other species that are focused on as well. But generally speaking, in Alaska, when people talk about aquaculture, they're referring to the state's salmon enhancement program. And so essentially, before statehood, the state saw pretty drastic declines in our salmon returns. And so in the early 70s, we developed a salmon enhancement program where we take adult salmon, we spawn those fish, and then we basically help their offspring get through the most critical stages of their life so that they're not preyed upon by other species. And then we release them into the ocean. And hopefully in 2 to 5 years, they come back and we're able to capture those salmon and eat them as food. On average, we release about 1.8 billion juvenile salmon into the North Pacific. Last year, which was actually a slightly lower return year, we saw about 34 million adult salmon return to the state, which had a rough economic value of about $70 million. And so that's, you know, money that is coming directly back into the state and captured through commercial fishermen and then sold in markets, you know, all over the country and all over the world. One of the potential growth sectors in Alaska is the mariculture industry. And so we've got what I would consider to be a burgeoning mariculture industry. And mariculture is essentially cultivating organisms in the ocean for food that are not salmon, essentially, or not fin fish. And so these are in Alaska, these are things like our shellfish, oysters, mussels, and gooey ducks, or a variety of different kelp species. And I think that there's a tremendous amount of opportunity in the state and the development of this mariculture industry.
Well, you have a lot of people farming kelp right now. What's the status of that in Alaska?
Well, in Alaska currently, there's a variety of different seaweed or kelp species that are being reared currently. I think the average yield on those is in excess of about 100,000 pounds, which in the grand scheme of things probably isn't that much. But I think that there's a huge capacity for Alaska to increase the amount of kelp production that is taking place in Kodiak and in various other places around Southeast, be it South Central or Southeast. Seaweed, along with some of these other shellfish, does provide a huge opportunity for a lot of different Alaskans to get into this new mariculture industry.
Do people feel that there could be some environmental risks with this, that you grow too many different things, that you're taking away nutrients from other species?
I think one of the interesting things about a lot of the species that are cultivated for mariculture is that they're either collected from extremely local regions. And so the potential for them to do harm to those regions is extremely low. And a lot of the species that are cultivated actually have pretty large environmental benefits. Things like all the shellfish or bivalves that are cultivated, they're filtering the water. And so they're pulling things out of the water and actually filtering it. All the different kelps that are processed do the same thing. They're drawing up nutrients, they're sequestering carbon, things from CO2 emissions. And so there's a lot of actual environmental benefits to a lot of the species that are currently being reared in Alaska and the species that will be raised in the future.
So what are the barriers to mariculture getting a foothold right now?
The interest is growing. There needs to be a market presence so that people that are actually raising these seafood products can actually sell them. There's got to be processing capacity. And so fishermen or individuals involved in the mariculture industry need to have a way to actually process the products into either food or even some of these other products. You know, we can turn things like some of the kelp species into supplements or into fertilizers. And so there's a number of different barriers out there, but there's a whole bunch of people in Alaska that are interested in overcoming a lot of these barriers. And the university and the state as a whole is looking at ways to try and solve some of these problems.
Do you think that this is a new frontier for Alaska mariculture?
I think it is. I think when you look at other portions of the world, they have invested pretty heavily in mariculture. And I think given our vast coastline and our pristine waters, I think that we've got an opportunity to really do something that not only creates clean, delicious food, but also helps the environment at the same time. And so I think there's a lot of the people that see value in that. And I think that there's an economic value to be had there as well.
Well, one of the things though, you hear from people that are in the mariculture business, growing kelp, and also oyster farms and things like that, is that there is no capacity to process things locally. What will it take to avoid the same dynamic that we have seen with the other fisheries, where basically we're just providing the product, the raw product, and it goes out of state to have its value added?
I think it takes creative ideas. You know, you look at some of the products that are being produced currently around the state from some of the mariculture organisms that are collected. There are people doing really creative things and creating unique products that are catching people's eyes, and they're making money doing it. And so I think a continued focus on some of those things, whether it's through seafood processing capacity, but even things like developing business models to help people market some of these products, I think all of those things are going to be integral parts in the development of this industry. You know, and I think some of the places where folks may leverage resources would be folks that are currently involved in commercial fishing operations that may have a boat that already has hydraulics, that has already a sense of the ocean and the sea and is comfortable driving and moving around and operating equipment. Those might be people that would get into this industry and benefit from it in the off season when they're not fishing for some of the other species that they typically target.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Thanks this week to KDLL's Sabine Pooks, KTOO's Rhonda McBride, and Professor Joel Marcus. Good fishing, everyone.